All right, the last time that I spoke to you, I had a teddy bear up here, and I talked to you about distractions. So now you're looking at the bag, and you're probably thinking, what is in the bag? So to not be a distraction, I'm going to put this down on the front pew, and we will get back to it. But when I was a child, actually my whole life, I've been very intrigued by superheroes. I remember as a child reading comic books and getting up early on a Saturday morning and watching cartoons about Aquaman and Wonder Woman, and you guys can't relate to this because you got Cartoon Network and its own every day, but Saturday mornings were the day for cartoons, and it was always neat to see these great superheroes. As I got older, I watched TV and saw The Arrow and The Flash, and then in movies we see Batman, Spider-Man, Thor, all these people that have supernatural abilities. And I always thought, gee, wouldn't it be so neat if I had those abilities too? If I could run fast, if I had the power to stop moving objects, that would be, oops, I hit the wrong button. That would be phenomenal. So, let's talk a little bit about how these superheroes that I have up on the screen, how they came into existence. Well, the first comic books that were ever distributed, or that were ever produced, actually occurred in Japan, and I don't think they were about superheroes particularly, but they were considered the first comic books that happened sometime around the 18th century. It wasn't until the 1930s that comic books and superheroes really took off in the U.S. The first major comic maker was DC Comics. The DC actually stands for Detective Comics, and was founded in 1934 by Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson. Some of their characters, some of their characters included Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and The Flash. All of these I think you probably have heard of over at one time or another. They had a lot of other comic book heroes and characters, but this is just some that I think you're familiar with. And then a few years later, in 1939, Marvel Comics was founded. And it was founded by a man named Martin Goodman. And I think you'll probably recognize some of these characters as well. Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor. Marvel Comics, though, is kind of unique. It was eventually sold to Disney. And there was a man named Stanley Martin Liber who had a significant role in Marvel Comics. You may have heard of the name Stan Lee. That's what he goes by now. But he worked his way up through the ranks. He was in charge of creativity. And he ended up co-creating a lot of the superheroes like Spider-Man and so forth. And he wrote a lot of the dialogue. Again, like I told you, this was eventually sold to Disney. And through his comics and everything, there was another show that was created that you may have seen on TV. It was called Stan Lee's Superhumans. I don't know if anyone's ever seen that or not, but there's some very unique individuals that have unique talent. Some of the actual people that were on the program, one was called, his nickname was the Human Calculator. His name was Scott Flansburgh. He was able to perform arithmetic calculations, like 2 and 3-digit numbers multiplied together, faster than people could key the number in a calculator. He could spit out the number no matter what it was. He could also perform square roots and cube roots. He was also a walking perpetual calendar. If you gave him any date that you could think of, he could tell you the day of the week where that date occurred. He did all this through his mind. I'm good in math, but I'm not that good. There was also a man who they called the Ultra Marathon Man. His name was Dan Karnesses. And Ron, I think you can appreciate this since you're a runner. But this individual ran 50 marathons in 50 days in 50 different states. So think how difficult that. As most of you know, I tried running in a marathon relay a couple weeks ago, and I ran 4 miles, and I was whipped. This guy did 50 marathons in 50 states in 50 days. He also ran 350 miles in an 80-hour, just slightly over 80 hours. He did that without any sleep. He also ran 135 miles across Death Valley in 120 degree heat. And he also ran a race called the Relay, and it went from Calistoga to Santa Cruz. He did it by himself without any help. He did it 11 different times in his life. So this guy had phenomenal talent that most people would not have. There was also a man on this show that used echolocation, and I think he was nicknamed the Batman because he was blind and could not see, yet he was able to ride a bicycle because he made this little noise like this clicking sound, and he would be able to hear it vibrate off of different objects and realize if he was getting close to something or not. So he would, you know, darkness did not bother him naturally because he was blind, and he was able to move around by using his ears or his hearing. And then there was another individual named Patrick Musimu who was able to hold his breath for over 8 minutes and dive down to almost 700 feet deep. And if you've ever done any scuba diving or anything, think how difficult that would be to clear your ears at 700 feet under the ocean. And the fact that it would take a while, and the fact that he would need to hold his breath for a significant amount of time, in this case, 8 minutes. Now, I will say he did not swim down. It was a cord, and he had a weight attached, and he slowly let himself down. But still, being able to hold your breath that long and to travel down 700 feet is pretty impressive. Okay, this is what we call a bell curve, for those of you who know anything about statistics. And without getting too complicated, most people are considered average. If you see where it says most people fall in, they don't deviate very far from what the average is. However, some people, these superhumans, are people with superpowers. They are on the far edges. Now, it really doesn't matter necessarily which end or which side of this bell that you're on, if it's the left or the right. It just depends on what you're measuring. You know, some people say, well, if you have to be on the right side, you're good. If you're the left side, it's bad. Not necessarily. If you're measuring how fast someone can run, then you would be on the right side. Maybe, you know, 25, 30 miles an hour would be probably the max if someone could run that fast. Slower people might be 4 or 5 miles an hour. They'd be on the left. But then if you were measuring how long it took to run a certain distance, like a marathon, then the fast people that could run a marathon in 2 hours would be on the left-hand side, and then the slower people that took 5 or 6 hours would be on the right-hand side. So anyway, this is just to kind of show you that most people are average, and it takes special people to do special things. All right, so you've enough about superheroes and comics, but are there superheroes in the Bible? Do we have any examples of superheroes in the Bible? Actually, I think we have quite a few. The first one that came to my mind, naturally, would be Samson, because think of the things that Samson was able to accomplish. He was able to kill a lion with his bare hands. He was able to kill 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of an ass. And he was also, at the very end of his life, he was able to use his strength to bring down a temple to not only kill himself, but thousands of Philistines. And let me say before I get too far that these people have these powers, not because of anything they did in particularly, but because they were given to them by God. So we look at Moses and some of the things that Moses accomplished. You know, he brought on the ten plagues, not him personally. Personally, he was basically the conduit for God. But he was able to bring on these 10 plagues. He also parted the Red Sea, and he also was able to bring water from a stone. And then you have Daniel. And if you think about what Daniel did, while Daniel was so unique, not only was he able to interpret King Nebuchadnezzar's dream, he was also able to tell King Nebuchadnezzar what his dream was. That way King Nebuchadnezzar knew that, since he was able to tell him what the dream was, that the interpretation should be accurate as well. Okay, so here's the big question. Is it possible for us to be superheroes? If we consider ourselves in that big section of that bell curve, and if we consider ourselves to be average, is it possible for us to be superheroes? So I'm going to do a little demonstration. So I'm going to have Dawson come up here. So Dawson, I had checked with him to make sure he would do this. And he said he would. And Dawson, do you know what you're going to do? No, okay, you don't know what you're going to do. Okay, well, I'm going to show you. Is it okay if we divulge which superhero you are? Is that okay? If we tell everybody your superhero powers? All right, I brought your costume, by the way. So we want to put this on you because you need this to do your to show your superpowers, okay? Let's see. You got to have your cape. All right. And then you need your mask. All right. Can you put that on? Okay. Come over here so everybody can see you. This is Mr. Magnificent. So if you see Mr. Magnificent out in public with his outfit on, please do not say, "Hey, Dawson," because we do not want the rest of everyone to know who he truly is, okay? Mr. Magnificent has two superhuman powers. You know what they are? I'll tell them, okay. You have the ability to not only read minds, but you also have X-ray vision, okay? Those are your two superpowers. All right, I have, I don't know if the people from Facebook can see it, but I have five cards numbered 1 through 5. And actually, each card is actually made up of two cards because I stapled them together because the numbers were bleeding through and I didn't want Mr. Magnificent to be able to see what the numbers were. So I have five numbers. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have Larry shuffle these cards. Turn around so you don't see. All right. Good job. All right. These cards are shuffled. So now what I want you, turn around. What I want you to do is read my mind, okay? I'm thinking of a number. And I want you to pick, you can't see which numbers these are, but pick which one you think I'm thinking about. You picked the number 2. Can everybody see this? Let's see how well you did. Because I actually have an envelope with a number in it. Let's see if you picked the number 2. So we're going to get Gary to open up the envelope to see what number's in the card. Or what card is in the envelope. What is it? It's 2. Congratulations. All right, was that very impressive? All right, you can go back. Thank you. All right. So now if Penn and Teller were here, they could probably tell you how that happened, but they're not here, so that's fine. Now, what hero in the Bible would you think about if you saw something like that happen? How about in Acts the 8th chapter, Simon the Sorcerer? He knew a lot of sleight of hand, different types of tricks that he could do to make the people think that he had some special ability, when actually all he had was a knowledge of how these tricks worked. But what if I show you other people in the Bible that you may not think of currently as superheroes, but after we talk about them, maybe you will. How about superheroes that exhibit the character of charity? Let's think of the people in the Bible who were very charitable and what they did. The widow and her mites. Have you ever thought about her as being a superhero? You've heard the story multiple times, and let's just read it again to refresh our memory. So it's in Mark, the 12th chapter. And if you have your pew Bible, it's on page 1170. And we're going to be reading the 12th chapter, verses 41 through 44. It says, "Now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury, and many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came and threw in 2 mites, which made a quadrant. So he called his disciples to himself, and he said to them, 'Assuredly, I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all of those who have given to the treasury. For they have put in all of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had, her whole livelihood.'" Now, to understand her situation, we really have to go back to what it was like when she was alive. You know, we live in a very capitalistic society, and we realize how important money is. But First of all, would we be capable of doing what she did? I mean, we could definitely sell our home, sell our cars, empty out our bank accounts, take one big thing of cash, and make a donation. We could do that. How many of us would be willing to do that? Probably none of us. But yet she took everything that she had, and she was willing to give it away. Now think about what I was saying. You know, we're a capitalistic society. We know how important money is. But think of the safeguards that we have in place, the safety nets to help those that are having difficult times. We have food stamps for those that are having trouble finding food. We have subsidized housing for people needing shelter. You have Medicaid and hospital charity care for those that need some sort of health care. So even if we were to give everything that we have, we would most likely still be able to survive fairly easily in the U.S. because all of the safety nets that we have out there for us. Think about what the widow had. I mean, she could maybe beg for alms from people that were more wealthy than her. Maybe she could glean the fields whenever the crops came in. But other than that, she probably didn't have a whole lot of other things that she could do to earn a living. Okay, how about the story of Peter? Well, before I leave that, going back to the widow. So anyway, we could have done the same thing that she did, but we probably wouldn't. She's at the far extreme of the bell curve, and she showed a significant amount of faith that God would provide for her one way or the other. So we look at the story of Peter and Dorcas, and you probably think, okay, in this story, the superhero's got to be Peter because he raised her from the dead. But actually, it's Dorcas. So in Acts 9 chapter, verses 36 through 43, we look at some of the things that, you know, what Dorcas had done. You know, she at this point in time, she has died. She is dead. She has died, and she is being mourned over. And the widows are telling everybody and telling Peter all the wonderful clothes that she's made for them. You know, she was a great seamstress, and she was very generous with her time. She did this for people. You look at that, and maybe you say, well, seamstress. I can't sew, so Dorcas would not apply for me. It really doesn't matter the fact that, you know, what her gift was. It could have been cooking meals for people that needed food. It could have been providing shelter for people. It could have been giving financial aid. Whatever it was, the fact that Dorcas did it, and she was very loved and was going to be missed because of her death, that Peter came in and ended up praying and raising her from the dead. We don't have many examples of people being raised from the dead in the Bible. You have two or three. So this was something that was very unusual. The apostles did not go around just raising everybody that was dead. This was a very special circumstance. And the reason that she was raised from the dead was, you know, it had to be due to her acts of kindness and her generosity and the fact that there was such a void after her death. Again, she did something phenomenal that any of us could do. Like I said, maybe not sewing, it could have been something else, but we could definitely be charitable. And again, she took time away from things that she could have done on her behalf, but because she had such great faith and a willingness to do so, she was able to do it. All right, how about superheroes with humility? Usually don't think of a superhero having humility, but we have some here. Over in Matthew, the 8th chapter, verses 5 through 13, and we'll read that one. If you'd like to turn over there, we can. It's on page 1119. And it says, "Then Jesus entered Capernaum. A centurion came to him, pleading with him, saying, 'Lord, my servant is lying at home, paralyzed, dreadfully tormented.' And Jesus said to him, 'I will come and heal him.' The centurion answered and said, 'Lord, I am not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak a word, and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, and come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it.' And when Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to those who followed, 'Assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel. And I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven, but the sons of the kingdom will be cast into outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.' And Jesus said to the centurion, 'Go your way, and as you have believed, so let it be done for you.' And his servant was healed that same hour." Let's look at that story for a moment. Here was a centurion, a man who was over 100 other men. He was in the military, and you could apply this. I know most of us aren't in the military, so you could apply this to a job as well. Say that this man had a fairly large business, that he had 100 different employees that worked under him. And usually, you know, you have come up through the ranks, because if you're in charge, you have experience, you've learned what needs to be done, you have the knowledge, so you tell your subordinates what needs to be done, and they do it. Well, why do you think, or don't you find it odd that he actually sought out Jesus? Because he talks about having the ability to tell his servants to do this or to do that, and they do it. Why would he not have just said to one of his other servants, "Hey, I hear about this Jesus fella. Go over there, see if you can find him, and have him come back and take care of this other servant that is sick." You know, if it was his child, you would have maybe understand it better, because we would do anything for our kids and we would make different sacrifices. But this had to be a really great boss to humble himself, to leave wherever he was and whatever he was doing, to go out and search for Jesus so that his servant could be healed. And once he found Jesus, and Jesus offered to come back and heal the servant, he said, "You don't even need to do that." He said, "I'm not worthy for you to even come to my house." He said, "Just say that it be so, and let it be done." Jesus was very impressed at his faith and rewarded him so by healing his servant. Again, is this something that anybody could have done? Yes, anybody could have sought out Jesus. Anybody could have gone up to him and asked for his help. But would people be willing to? Would you have been willing to do it for an employee of yours that may have needed assistance at that time? Now, when I say think back to that and see if you would do it, I'll remember that you have more knowledge now than what these individuals had at the time where they did these things. So when you think about it from the perspective of the people of that day and what they were experiencing and what they have gone through. Another example of humility: the woman who was subject to bleeding. This is a woman who had an issue for 12 years. She had gone to various physicians and tried to get her problem corrected, was not having any success. She had seen Jesus. She had probably heard stories about Jesus and the miracles that he could do. She realized that was an opportunity for her to be healed. But did she go up to Jesus and did she put her hands on him and say, "Jesus, please heal me. I've been sick for 12 years and I need your assistance"? No. She was very humble about it, so humble that she said, "All I need to do is touch the hem of his garment." And think about that. Why the hem? Why not just touch the belt or the top of the shoulder or something like that? If you could look at a piece of clothing and talk about the importance of each piece, the hem was probably the least important piece of the garment, because it was probably dirty, because it was closer to the ground, probably had dust on it and so forth. And think about it. This was probably the same garment that the Roman soldiers cast lots for when he was crucified. So you wonder, you know, here she was. She touches the hem of Jesus' garment and was immediately healed. Was it because the garment was special? No, it was because of her faith. Those same Roman soldiers who probably ended up with that garment, I'm sure that, you know, when they got it, they probably were going to do one of two things. They were going to either keep it for their own personal use or sell it and make a few dollars. But if one of them had some ache or pain and picked up that garment, his ache or pain would not automatically go away, because he would not have had the faith. So it was basically the faith that she had that was able to persuade Jesus to cure her. How about superheroes of courage and truth? How about Naaman's servant girl? If we remember the story of Naaman, he was a leper and basically had no hope. Yet his wife's servant, was talking about how if only he would go to Israel, there were prophets in Israel that could heal him. So think of what the servant girl was putting on the line, because she was volunteering this information. So she was being held captive, and she was, and even if Naaman was a good master, "I would much rather be free and do my own thing than have to, you know, do the duty of a master." Yet she was being held there as a servant, And she provided this information. Think of the things that she risked. What happens if Naaman goes there and wasn't cured? You know, we know how upset that he got when he didn't initially heed what Elisha the prophet wanted him to do by dipping 7 times in the River Jordan. Think about what would happen when he got back. And it wasn't one of these little trips that, you know, when we go to the doctor, we take a half day off from work, we go to the doctor, we get looked at, and we come back. I know countries, the boundaries of countries change over time. So I went on Google just to see how far it was from Syria to Israel, and it was like over 400 miles. So if you assume that they can travel maybe 20 miles in a day, it would be a 3-week journey each way to make it to Israel and then to come back. So he would be gone for 6 weeks. So he went to the king and told the king, it's like, look, you know, I have been told that there is a prophet in Israel that can heal me. You know, do you mind if I go? So the king says, no, please go. I'll write a letter to the king of Israel, letting him know that you're coming and asking him to help you. I'll do whatever I can. So think about what would have happened then if Naaman comes back, he's not healed, and then the king sees him. I mean, he's like, Naaman, why did you listen to that servant girl? You know, you wasted 6 weeks of your life pursuing after something that wasn't going to happen. Naaman would have never trusted her again, yet she was willing to have the courage to speak up and let Naaman know what needed to be done to have his leprosy cured. About the thief on the cross, and let's look at that. Normally you wouldn't think of the thief on the cross being a superhero. And I just dropped my clicker, I don't know where it went. Mr. Magnificent, where's my super clicker? Hold on.
Well, completely vanished.
What'd he say? On the floor. You're right, again. Do we have another clicker? We'll search for it later. Sorry about that. Okay, as I was saying, you normally don't think of the thief on the cross being a superhero. But let's look at that and read that passage over in Luke, the 23rd chapter, verses 33 through 43. And when they came to the place called Calvary, here they crucified him and the criminals, and on the right hand, one on the right hand and the other on the left. Then Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they divided his garments and cast lots. And the people stood looking on, but even the rulers with them sneered, saying, He saved others, let him save himself, if he is the Christ, the chosen of God. The soldiers also mocked him, coming and offering him sour wine, and saying, If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. And an inscription also was written over him in letters of Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, This is the king of the Jews. Then one of the criminals who were hanged, blasphemed him, saying, If you are the Christ, save yourself and us. But the other, answering, rebuked him, saying, Do you not even fear God, seeing you are under the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we receive the due rewards of our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said to Jesus, Lord, remember me, and when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus said to him, Assuredly, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. The most interesting verse to me is verse 42, and we'll talk about that shortly. But if you think about that, here this man is, he is about to die for his sins or for his transgressions, the laws that he violated. Yet he had the courage to recognize Jesus. And going back to verse 42, then he said, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Think of the situation. You have Jesus who is being crucified, who's getting ready to die. You have the thief who himself is getting ready to die. Yet he says to Jesus, remember me when you get to your kingdom. The fact that he said the word kingdom means that he realized that the Lord, or that Jesus, is king. And the fact that when he gets to the kingdom, he realizes that the kingdom is not going to occur now because Jesus is about to die. It's going to have to occur after the fact. if you think about it, what it looks like to me, the thief on the cross had a better understanding of what Jesus' purpose was than his own apostles. You think what his apostles did. Once Jesus died, they took off. They thought, it's over. They went into hiding. So it amazes me that the thief was able to speak such courage and truth. And again, this isn't something that this is something that anyone could have done. Anyone could have said those words had they been in the same situation. But the key is, would they? Oops. And then we have Nathan. And if you remember the story of David and Bathsheba, I know we're running out of time, so I'll try to speed up. But David had committed adultery with Bathsheba and had Bathsheba's husband killed. He thought everything was good to go. He thought he'd gotten away with it. And Nathan comes up to him. And Nathan, you know, the way Nathan did it was very interesting. He did not come up to David and say, David, you have sinned. You need to be punished. What he did was he told basically a parable. He talked about the poor man who had just the one sheep, who nurtured that and cared for that one little sheep. And he compared that to the man who had a huge flock of sheep who had more than he would ever need. Yet when the man had a visitor and needed to provide for that visitor, instead of taking for his own flock, he took that one man's little sheep to feed the traveler. David was absolutely furious. He says, you know, that guy needs to be killed. He needs to restore, you know, I think it was fourfold to the guy whose sheep that he took. He was furious. And Nathan goes, David, you are the man. I think that applies a lot to us, or we can apply that story in our own lives a lot, because if we think about it, you know, how many times do we try to justify our own actions? You know, if we're a parent and we have a young child and the young child is acting up, we say, well, you know, he got to bed late, he wasn't feeling well, it's not my fault, I really can't control him, you know, I'm doing the best I can, you know. If he had gotten a good night's sleep, this wouldn't happen. The person on the other pew sitting behind you is saying, why can't that parent control their child? You know, they have a different take. And I think it's important for us, when we look at situations and try to, instead of trying to justify ourselves by what we do, we should look at it from the situation of a stranger. If a stranger had done whatever it is that we have done or contemplating about doing it, would we still do it if we thought it was okay for the stranger? If we look at the stranger and we say, well, heck no, a stranger should not do something like that, then we should not try to justify it for ourselves. Superheroes of obedience. We have Esther, and if you remember the story of Esther, there was the king was having trouble with his wife. I guess there was a party, and the king and all his buddies were celebrating, and the king decided to have the queen come in and dance for them, and she refused. So the king was her crown was taken away from her. They searched for another replacement. Esther ended up being the replacement. Haman was the villain in the story. He wanted to basically wipe away the Jews and got the king to sign an order allowing the citizens to do so. Her uncle came to her and said, Esther, you know, look, you've got to do something. So that in and of itself seems like a reasonable request, except it's very difficult getting an audience with the king. And if you show up to talk to the king and he doesn't accept you, you could be put to death. Yet she obeyed her uncle, went in there and did what needed to be done, and I think most of you know don't know the story. Again, it was something that was difficult to do mentally, but not physically. It's something that any of us could have done. And then how about probably the absolute greatest superhero of all, and that is Jesus. But Dave pointed out something in the lesson a couple of weeks ago that made me kind of rethink my lesson. At first I thought about Jesus and all the abilities that he had, all the miracles that he could perform, the fact that he could walk on water, the fact that he could turn water into wine, he could heal the sick, raise the dead, and surely that seems what a superhero would do. But in reality, the most important thing that he did was nothing. It was what he didn't do. It was the fact that he didn't sin. We had the opportunity to live our lives without sinning. Yet, because of the choices that we've made through our lives, we weren't able to fulfill that. So, I have a couple passages here talking about how he resisted temptation when Satan tempted him, and then also how when Peter came to his defense, he said that he could have called 12 legions of angels, that he was going to go through with God's plan regardless. So it was true obedience. And again, we can be obedient. We do not need special powers to be obedient. There it goes. All right. So what are the common themes that we find if we want to be superheroes or super Christians? First of all, you need the opportunity. Superman cannot save Lois Lane if she is home in bed, safe and sound. There has to be an opportunity if you're going to be a superhero. And I think any of us can look at our lives and see that there were opportunities that presented themselves to us so that we could make, very good decisions and help others or to do what was right. And hopefully in a lot of cases we did those. We made the right decisions and we came through. But I guarantee you that there were other times that we didn't always make the best decision. And I can assure you that there will be other opportunities as long as we are living. Okay, another thing to be the superhero is you got to make the right choice and you got to act. Just because an opportunity presents itself, if you don't choose correctly or if you don't act in the appropriate way, you're not being a superhero or a super Christian. And like we said before when I was going through the different characters, none of these individuals did anything that we are not capable of doing ourselves. And then finally, probably the biggest, is that all of them had faith. Every single character had faith that they were doing what was right. And even though it may not have turned out the way they had envisioned, they had faith that it would. So that is basically the lesson. I appreciate your attention. We'd like to offer this opportunity to anyone who is not a member of the Lord's Church and would like to be baptized for the remission of their sins. And we'd also extend an invitation to those who are currently members of the Lord's Church but have fallen away for whatever reason and would appreciate the prayers of the congregation. If you would, come forward while we sing.